You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Welcome to our first episode. Before I jump into today's show, let's talk about what you can expect from the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast. So Charles Roberts and I decided to create this podcast to give you content that is 100% focused on the Denver metro real estate market. We'll be interviewing investors and various real estate professionals to bring you their perspectives. Also, we'll be discussing trends, local real estate news, stories from our own investments, and frankly, really anything else that is relevant to the Denver real estate investing scene. On today's show, Charles interviews Christian, who is one of his investor friends. So Christian, in just a little bit over a decade, has been able to build his real estate portfolio from zero properties to over 80 properties in the Denver metro area. Show notes and links will be available at denverinvestmentrealestate.com/podcast1. Here's Charles and Christian. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Charles Roberts. I'm the president of York Castle Real Estate, and today I have the honor of interviewing a friend and colleague, Christian, who is an investor in Metro Denver and has been doing it for a while and is going to teach us a whole bunch about what he's gone through, the good, the bad. I'm going to ask him a lot of questions, and he's going to tell you all about investing in Denver. Christian, say hi.
Hi.
So let me just jump right into it. Tell me about your story. You're a Denver native. Tell me when you started. Let's hear it.
I'm a Denver native, and out of college, I was a mortgage broker, and I started with the wrong company. I was doing very well, but the company really didn't have their stuff together, so I hightailed it to Florida to move out of the state for a while and try something new. Made me appreciate Colorado 10 times more and appreciate my family 10 times more, because when you don't have them around, it's tough. So moved back to Denver, started in sales, and sales kind of led me to really understanding residual income. And once I grasped that, I always had an interest in real estate. Those two things collided, and I slowly transitioned out of telecom sales into real estate.
When did you buy your first property in Denver?
It was December 2004.
And why did you buy it?
It was my first home to live in.
Okay, so you bought a place to live, and then when did you start investing beyond that?
Second house I bought in 2006, which was a condo. And when I bought that, the intention was a quick flip. Paint, carpet, sell it. And, of course, it sat there for 3 months. And, you know, my agent had every excuse why I wasn't selling. And a friend of a friend said, hey, I've got somebody that wants to rent this place. And that's when it started. That's when I became a landlord.
Were you very hesitant to be a landlord? Because, you know, as you know now, being a landlord can be scary. What were your thoughts?
Again, knowing the value of residual income and being a finance guy by trade, I knew it was a good long-term play. I thought I bought the condo right. I think I paid like $90,000. And again, it was carpet paint. It's not like I had a whole lot of money into it. And the mortgage was about $500. And I think the first tenant I had paid $800. So it wasn't a huge income earner, but definitely cut my teeth on learning that. Went and bought my first leasing contract at Office Depot and started from there.
Okay, so you own one rental property now in 2006. What got you to dive in deeper?
So I made my big mistake early in my career, and I am not remorseful. I kind of got punched in the chin early. But what I did was I bought a condo / penthouse downtown that a family friend had to get out of. And I basically wrote it down once 2007 hit. It never cash flowed. I lived in there personally. I would have roommates. I'd move out. I'd rent the whole thing. Again, never cash flowed. So learned early on the value of positive cash flow. Right after that, I quickly bought a dog of a property in lower Highlands, if you want to call it. It's kind of in a weird area. But it was rough. It needed work. But again, it cash flowed from day one, and it reaffirmed what I was doing.
And when was that?
That was probably 2008.
Okay. And that's when you started buying a lot more. Tell us about when you jumped in with all 3 feet.
So I left my corporate gig after almost 5 years to the day, cashed out my 401, and bought a triplex in the Highlands for $165,000. And basically one unit paid the mortgage and the other two paid me.
And this was 2008, so the market had already started turning down.
Right.
And people were very, very afraid to buy. So how do you advise people when they haven't bought something yet? And especially in this situation where the world had just fallen apart. What were you thinking at that time?
I was thinking long term. I was thinking buy and hold. And it's funny, I went to one of the pre-Your Castle events, and I met with Lon Welsh, and I met with some other individuals, and they were really heavy into flipping.
Yep.
And I said, hey, I just bought this triplex. Here's the numbers. And they're like, kind of, they wanted to talk about flipping. But then I showed them the numbers, and they're like, wow, looks like you hit a home run with this, and which I thought in my own head, yes, I did. So I'm sorry to not answer your question directly there, but I wanted to mention that.
Yeah.
But after that, it really started to snowball once I left the corporate gig. I bought a couple of really low cost properties, and was able to get substantially higher rents than even I imagined. And that really got the gears working.
And were you thinking to yourself, everybody says this is a bad time to buy, the market's terrible, Denver's terrible, the world is falling apart, Goldman Sachs is falling apart, the Dow has plummeted. I mean, what were you thinking? Because the world was telling us at that time to not buy properties.
Well, I have friends and family that, I've learned, talk behind my back, how stupid I was, what's this guy doing? My own father didn't want me to be in some of the neighborhoods where I was buying properties. He thought it was risky. And I said, I just bought a house for $30,000 and I rented it for $800. I mean, my mortgage payment is $150 a month. I mean, it's all about cash flow. So to me, I wasn't buying the long-term value of the property. I was buying the cash flow. That's what made sense to me. I could service the debt. I could service the minimal repair because I was the property manager. I was the head custodian. I did it all. So I bought what I could manage, and then I was able to get some lines of credit off of those properties and buy a couple more.
So the first couple, did you pay cash for them, HELOC off of your properties? Did you get loans? I mean, those were such small-time properties. I think it might have been hard to get loans. How did you acquire your first couple of actual rentals?
So what I did was I found a credit partner, which was my father. He was a W-2 person for 30 years, great credit. And that helped me kind of start to get relationships with the banks. The properties obviously spoke for themselves. So once we took the properties to the bank, we were able to get some lines of credit. And I started to put more of the puzzle together. And I said, okay, well, I can buy more. I can leverage those, buy some more. And then, lo and behold, property values really started to increase. So I was able to really take it to the next level in getting lines of credit. And I'm talking lines of credit at 4.5%. I mean, to me, it's almost free money.
Mm-hmm.
It was so low. I was buying these houses in cash. And then again, fixing them up, renting them out, turning right back around in a couple of months, leveraging those, and trying to buy one or two more.
So let's go down this pathway. I'm sure a lot of the people listening have the desire to do what you've done, maybe have some ability, have the guts to do it, but maybe don't have the money. Let's talk about who should they be going to. You went to your dad. That's really interesting. How would you advise someone to approach a credit partner, be a family member or a friend? What do they have to bring to the table?
I think you have to have a level of understanding of the financial numbers. So now later on in my career, jumping forward, I approach investors and borrow money from them to buy more properties. So I needed to tell my story and have it down on paper. So I became a professional at learning Excel and showing the true cost of properties, but also showing the know-how on how to fix them up, you know, what to put into them, what not to put into them, how often do they turn over, so on and so forth. So you have to be able to paint a clear picture.
Okay, so you have to make a case for it, and you did make a case with your dad. So at this point, you own about 80 properties. Let's actually talk about how you went from one or two. When did it really start exploding for you? How many did you buy in 2009, 2010? When did you take it to this multi-level, bigger picture?
Yeah, I would say probably 2009 to even up until this last year of 2016, probably, you know, 5 to 10 a year.
Okay, so you didn't buy 20 in 1 year. You actually went fairly methodically buying, almost like dollar cost averaging, buying through the downturn and buying well into the upturn.
Exactly.
And why? Why did you do it that way?
Because I didn't want to bite off more than I could chew, and I wanted to be able to fix them up, rent them out before I moved on to the next project. But I did get a little ahead of myself in the early days. I had one property sit empty for a year.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I just couldn't get to it. I went back to telecom briefly because I needed more money coming in. Hmm. You know, when you buy these properties early on, you're putting all your time and money into them. You don't have a lot of extra time or money. So all my money was exhausted into the properties, and I knew how to sell telecom. I was good at it. So I went back and kind of double dipped for a while and just simply didn't have the capacity to hire people. I wasn't at that point in my career. Didn't want anyone else managing my property. So I kind of staggered it. Now, in hindsight, I wish I would have bought, you know, 20 or 30 and just let them sit there,
sure,
knowing the value, because I was buying at $40,000. And then, you know, a year later, I was buying at $60,000. And then 80,000, and then they went to 120,000. So it just kind of kept going up and up.
But of course, you didn't know what the prices were going to do. So that's all hindsight. That's retrospective. That's, you know, Monday morning quarterback stuff.
I had no idea. But again, it didn't matter.
Right, because the cash flow
was
there.
Buying cash flow. I was all about cash flow. Nothing you told me would have got me to change my mind. I had friends that were flippers. I had friends that were landlords as well. As all I cared about was cash flow.
So when people come to you today and say, you know, Christian, I love what you did, you know, what do I need to know to be an investor? How do I be like you? What do you say?
I mean, that's tough. People always ask me, how do you start? And I really don't have a good answer for that. Again, I believed in residual income. I like swinging a hammer, working on properties. My father has every tool known to man. So when I bought my first house, actually, my father was less than a mile away. Within 2 days, I had 7 walls knocked down, and he was over there helping me kind of rebuild this place and put it back together. And that's how we started our first 10 properties, was just kind of me and him swinging away, putting floors in, painting. It took us a while before we had the need and the want to hire subs and contractors.
This is going to be a tough question, but do you think that the average person has what it takes, either intellectually or their risk-taking ability, or if nothing else, just the damn work ethic we're talking about? I'm sure you think about that. I think about this. I've been doing it for 20 years. What do you want to share there?
For me, the number one thing was just pure ambition. I felt I wanted it more than anyone. I didn't care if I had to work nights. I didn't care if I had to work weekends. You know, if I got those tenant calls at 10 at night, so be it. You just deal with it. And I don't think a lot of people have that. They don't want to give up a Saturday or a Sunday to go paint a property, or somebody trashes your place and now you got to spend your weekend cleaning it out because you got to get it rented by that following week. If you got property sitting there vacant, you're not making any money.
Yeah, my 17-year-old still reminds me of the Valentine's Day weekend. He was 12 that we spent cleaning and painting my Winona Court duplex. My wife doesn't even mention it, but my son does. And, you know, there's nothing that 2 or 3 or 5 years of 80-hour weeks can't solve, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So how do you feel about that when people come to you and they say, hey, I just went to this seminar. I talked to some really great people and they said, you know, I can be an investor. What's your counsel to them, good or bad? Can they? Or do you say, look, here's what you're not thinking about. This is what people who are listening to this podcast want to know is, what does it take? Can I actually do it?
I think anyone can do it. I really do. You just got to put your mind to it. I know one of my investors, a matter of fact, was a single woman that put together a 30-property portfolio in Texas. And I asked myself, I said, I know what I'm doing. I have, you know, I bought a pickup truck. I'm hauling rock on weekends. I'm painting. I'm moving, you know, 2x4s. How did a single woman put all this together?
Exactly.
But she did. She found a way. So you just got to find ways to get over those initial hurdles and then find systems to take it to the next level. I mean, when I first got started, I only bought appliances off Craigslist. I'd pay $50, $100. God, I hope this lasts for 6 months.
I still do. Where do you buy them?
I buy all brand new now.
Really? You do?
I only buy brand new.
Craigslist and Habitat for Humanity still.
I won't do it anymore because I don't want to pay my guys to go over there and haul it out after 6 months. Mm-hmm. And I have relationships now with stores that I know I'm getting the best bargain basement deal.
Great.
I'm not buying the frills package, if you will. So I'm getting appliances brand new at a good price, one and done. I'm done with it.
Great. Tell us a couple of fun, interesting, wild-ass, crazy, scary, hope-it-never-happens-again. Tell us a couple stories, either of property, of a tenant, a situation. I'm sure you have many, many of them. I'll give you a couple minutes. Let's talk about a few.
Well, you're going to see some horror stories in real estate. And, you know, another one of my investors, he went to a seminar years ago and they told him, if you're not ready to kick somebody out on Christmas Eve, you shouldn't get into this business.
Yeah, I once evicted someone on the night of Thanksgiving, believe it or not, and I did not feel bad about it because it turns out they had lied to me, but I am that guy who actually dropped off a 3-day notice and did it myself and didn't feel bad because they had taken advantage of me.
That's right. I mean, that's – you got to have a tough stomach in this business sometimes. You know, I've had tenants that promised me the world. I showed up to get the rent. The place is vacant. There's cockroaches running all over the floor. You know, they dumped whatever it is all over the carpets to be spiteful. Cabinet doors are missing, which are impossible to find. Yeah. I think my worst one was on Calumet Street, where I literally was in there with a snow shovel cleaning out the place.
Just so much trash.
I mean, I'm talking a foot, 2 feet of trash and filth and dog poop and you name it. You know, I had to get rid of all the floors. Everything had to be recarpeted, repainted. So if you're not willing and ready to handle those situations, then probably shouldn't be a landlord. Maybe you should be a flipper.
You're absolutely right. How many properties had you owned at that time? I'm curious, at what point in your career were you still doing the snow shovel type of stuff?
That was property 5. Yeah. So I learned early on. But again, I said that that was a low-end property that I had bought. And again, everyone advised me not to buy that property. But it made sense to me. It was close to me. And again, I wanted to swing the hammer, so to speak. I wanted to fix this place up. I loved doing it. So,
do you have a sense of how much money you've made off that property since you bought it?
So that one I ended up selling. Mm-hmm. because it got to the point where there were no more aesthetics to fix up. The foundation that it was on was crap. Mm. So I said, I can't put any more money into this property. And we put it on the market. And every property that I've ever sold or put on the MLS goes for way more than I anticipated it was going to sell for. Mm. So got a great offer. It was only a 3,100 square foot lot, and some fix and flipper actually found a way to pop the top on that and did extremely well.
Great. Have you ever had a situation where you were felt physically threatened? Question I get once in a while, and it's a good question.
I've had people, you know, threaten me that they're going to do this or that, but I've never had an altercation. Once I got to about 17 properties, I could no longer mentally property manage these places. I just didn't have it in my capacity anymore where, you know, I just felt on edge. I felt like I was going to snap.
Yep.
It, you know, sometimes it's just so difficult to deal with these people that was the turning point for me when I hired a property manager.
And when was that? What year was that?
Probably 2012 or 2013.
Okay, so let's talk about that. You had 17 properties in your first 4 or 5 years. You were doing great. Your timing happened to have been terrific, but you were continuing to buy properties now during the upturn. And you say to yourself at that point, all right, I need to scale up. I need more help. Maybe you had some handyman help and stuff like that. But
right.
That's a big step, as you say, I'm going to take to the next step and bring a property manager in. Tell us about that decision-making process.
So I got lucky. I was introduced to a woman that was a professional property manager, had her stuff together like you couldn't believe, was very by the book, and I gave her everything. She did a great job. I felt like I certainly didn't have the control like I once did, which bothered me. But she lasted about 2 years before she decided to take a different course. But the nice thing was I had learned so much with her that I had a lot of systems and tools in place. I subscribed to PropertyWare, which is all my my admin stuff, my billing, my accounts and balances, you know, on a system. It's, you know, I took it out of Excel, I put it onto a professional system, and that way you can hire somebody a lot easier to manage that than to try and clean up your mess from a bunch of Excel documents.
And where did you go after she went away?
I hired another individual that was a friend from the past, but he had managed a 200-unit apartment building. And if you want to hear horror stories, you should probably talk to him because it was a C-grade apartment building, and he's seen everything.
I'll bet you. Let me ask you this question. I hear a lot of newer investors say, okay, I want to buy like a condo and then maybe get a house and then get to a duplex and then get to like an 8-plex or a 15-plex, you know, and start buying apartments because that's where you're going to make the money. So I'm noticing here, because I've known you forever, that you didn't do that. Why didn't you? Was it intentional? Was it not intentional? What do you say to people who feel that that is the career path they think they want to move into larger properties?
Again, I'll go back to cash flow on this. I always felt that I was making more cash flow on the single families than the condos. And some people might know this, some people might not, but once you get over 5 units, then you're into a whole different world of commercial lending. So I always kept it to be a 4-plex or under that I focused on. I knew that market. I didn't pretend to know that I knew how to manage an 8-unit or a 12-unit or a 25. I mean, I talk to my property manager now all the time about how did he manage a 200-unit building and what were the obstacles. And one he told me was the city came one day and said, we got to check your electric. They found it was completely out of date, and they made the owners basically put in a whole new electrical system, which was hundreds of thousands of dollars. And, you know, city inspectors aren't knocking on my single families to come in and inspect anything. So to me, it's a huge difference on, you know, single family versus multifamily. If that's the route you want to go, maybe you should just start with that. I don't think you're going to learn what you need to know by buying condos and then transitioning to that.
But you don't think it's obvious that that's where someone should want to go, obviously, because that's not what you did. You still have a whole bunch of single families, maybe a couple of duplexes or triplexes thrown in. Yeah. But you've, for your portfolio, you've felt better, more comfortable, whatever the word is, with the smaller properties.
Yeah, I mean, I can handle a vacancy or two on single families. I mean, if I buy a actually, I know a woman that bought a building in Aurora, I think it was about 20 units, had a huge infestation of bed bugs. Mm. And I believe she had to turn over the entire property. I mean, I can't manage 20 vacancies. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't manage the city coming and saying, you have to change out your electrical grid. You know, I didn't want to take those huge hits, which is why I don't think most people just go into commercial real estate right away. You actually need some capital and know-how before you can take on bigger projects like that.
So you're a young guy. You've got 80 properties. You've got your financing figured out. Where do you go from here, Christian?
That's a good question. I ask myself that every single day. You know, about 4 or 5 years ago, I felt like I had things under control, so I started traveling the world. I've been to Asia, been to Europe, I've been to South America several times, and I did some amazing trips, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. But again, after that time period, you're always eager to get home. I always came back with, you know, bigger and better business ideas, and it's what drives me. I mean, even on weekends, I'm sitting there thinking, how do I improve the business? And you know, what do I do differently, or what does the future hold? I read everything I can get my hands on. I subscribe to every wholesale list in town. I subscribe to every newsletter I can get my hand on, because I'm always educating myself. And I think beyond just the ambition, you have to always work on continuing education, or else, you know, you might get left behind.
So let's say I'm a guy, I'm in my late 20s, I got a job, I'm pretty smart, I think I can work hard. I want to get into real estate. Give me your parting advice. I look to you, I'm looking you in the eye and say, Christian, this is what I want to do. How do I get started? Where do I go? What do I do?
Well, you have to have the ambition. I mean, nobody's going to do it for you. I don't care if you go to Barnes & Noble and pick up a book. They're all the same. They're not going to tell you any details.
Exactly.
Believe me, I tried.
Me too. So yeah. I did when I started 20 years ago.
You just learn by going. I mean, you just learn by doing. And that's why you don't bite off more than you can chew. I mean, if you got a $60,000 a year job and you already have one mortgage, well, you can probably afford one more. So you buy one property, you figure it out, and you get comfortable before you move on. As I've, you know, grown with my business, I've learned that other people's money is invaluable. And that's what I do now. I've bought properties now where not only they'll lend me 100% of the purchase price, they'll also lend me the fix-up. So what's my return if I have zero money into it?
Infinite.
And then what I'll do is I'll take that property to the bank. I'll get it refinanced. I'll pay off the investor. And now I have a property that I own free. Well, I don't own free and clear, but I own, you know, there's no partnership deal. It's my property. And now I've got a 30-year long-term note.
Simple and straightforward.
Yeah.
Great. Like to wrap up here. Christian, this has been a true pleasure talking about this. Thank you so much, and love to have you come back as you progress your career.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
So I hope you enjoyed listening to the interview as much as I did. Show notes and links are available at denverinvestmentrealestate.com/podcast1. If you have any requests for topics, please email me at chris@denverinvestmentrealestate.com. Thanks for listening to our first podcast. This is Chris Lopez, signing off until next time.